Tunde. Tunde is doing laps in the pool, splashing more than he needs, so Enuma will notice him, trying not to show that he wants to be noticed. She is flipping through Today's Woman. She flicks her eyes back to the magazine every time he looks up, pretending to be intent on reading about Toke Makinwa and her surprise winter wedding broadcast on her YouTube channel. He can tell Enuma is watching him. He thinks she can tell that he can tell. It's exciting. Tunde is 21, just out of that period of his life where everything seemed the wrong size, too long or too short, pointing in the wrong direction, unwieldy. Enuma is 4 years younger, but more of a woman than he is a man. Demure, but not ignorant. Not too shy either, not in the way she walks or the quick smile that darts across her face when she understands a joke a moment before everyone else. She's visiting Lagos from Ibadan. She's the cousin of a friend of a boy Tunde knows from his photojournalism class at college. There's been a gang of them hanging out together over the summer. Tunde spotted her the first day she arrived. Her secret smile and her jokes that he didn't at first realise were jokes. And the curve of her hip. And the way she fills her T-shirts. Yes. It's been quite a thing to arrange to be alone together with Enuma. Tunde's nothing if not determined. Enuma said early on in the visit that she had never enjoyed the beach. Too much sand, too much wind. Swimming pools are better. Tunde waited 1, 2, 3 days, then suggested a trip. We could all drive down to Akodo Beach, take a picnic, make a day of it. Enuma said she would prefer not to go. Tunde pretended not to notice. The night before the trip, he started to complain of an upset stomach. It's dangerous to swim with a stomach complaint. The cold water might shock your system. You should stay home, Tunde. But I'll miss the trip to the beach. You should not be swimming in the sea. Enuma's staying here. She can bring a doctor if you need one. One of the girls said, but you'll be alone together in this house. Tunde wished her to be struck dumb in that very moment. My cousins are coming later, he said. No one asked which cousins. It had been that kind of hot, lazy summer, with people wandering in and out of the big house, around the corner from Ikoyi Club. Enuma acquiesced. Tunde noticed her not protesting. She didn't stroke her friend's back and ask her to stay home from the beach too. She said nothing when he got up half an hour after the last car left and stretched, and said he was feeling much better. She watched him as he jumped from the short springboard into the pool, her quick smile flashing. He makes a turn under the water. It is neat, his feet barely breaking the surface. He wonders if she saw him do it. But she's not there. He looks around, sees her shapely legs, bare feet padding out of the kitchen. She's carrying a can of Coca-Cola.
Hey,
he says, in a mock lordly tone.
Hey, savant girl. Bring me that cook.
She turns and smiles with wide, limpid eyes. She looks to one side and then the other and points a finger at her chest as if to say, who, me? God, but he wants her. He doesn't know exactly what to do. There have only been two girls before her, and neither of them became girlfriends. At college, they joke about him that he's married to his studies, because he's always so single. He doesn't like it, but he's been waiting for someone he really wanted. She has something. He wants what she has. He plants his palms on the wet tiles and raises himself out of the water and onto the stone in one graceful movement which he knows shows off the muscles of his shoulders, his chest and collarbone. He has a good feeling. This is going to work. She sits on a lounger. As he stalks towards her, she digs her nails in under the can's tab, as if she's about to open it.
Oh, no, he says, still smiling. You know such things are not for the likes of you.
She clutches the coke to her midriff. It must be cold there against her skin. She says demurely, I just want a little taste. She bites her bottom lip. She must be doing it on purpose. Must be. He's excited. This is going to happen. He stands over her.
Give it to me.
She holds the can in one hand and rolls it along her neck as if to cool herself. She shakes her head. And then he's on her. They play wrestle. He takes care not to really force her. He's sure she's enjoying it as much as he is. Her arm comes up over her head, holding the can to keep it far away from him. He pushes her arm back a little more, making her gasp and twist backwards. He makes a grab for the can of coke and she laughs low and soft. He likes her laughter.
Aha! Trying to keep that drink from your lord and master, he says. What a wicked servant girl you are.
And she laughs again and wriggles more. Her breasts push up against the V-neck of her swimming costume.
You'll never have it, she says. I will defend it with my very life.
And he thinks, clever and beautiful. May the Lord have mercy upon my soul. She's laughing, and he's laughing. He leans his body weight into her. She's warm underneath him.
Do you think you can keep it from me?
He lunges again, and she twists to escape him. He makes a grab at her waist. She puts her hand to his. There's the scent of orange blossom. A wind gusts up and hurls a few white handfuls of blooms into the swimming pool. There is a feeling in his hand, as if some insect has stung him. He looks down to swat it away, and the only thing on his hand is her warm palm. The sensation grows steadily and swiftly. At first it is pinpricks in his hand and forearm, then a swarm of buzzing prickles, then it is pain. He is breathing too quickly to be able to make a sound. He cannot move his left arm. His heart is loud in his ears. His chest is tight. She is still giggling, soft and low. She leans forward and pulls him closer to her. She looks into his eyes. Her irises are lined with lights of brown and gold, and her lower lip is moist. He is afraid. He is excited. He realizes that he could not stop her, whatever she wanted to do now. The thought is terrifying. The thought is electrifying. He is achingly hard now and does not know when that happened. He cannot feel anything at all in his left arm. She leans in, bubblegum breath, and kisses him softly on the lips. Then she peels away, runs to the pool and dives in one smooth, practiced movement. He waits for the feeling to come back to his arm. She does her laps in silence. Not calling to him or splashing water at him. He feels excited. He feels ashamed. He wants to talk to her, but he is afraid. Maybe he imagined it all. Maybe she will call him a bad name if he asks her what happened. He walks to the stall on the corner of the street to buy a frozen orange drink, so he won't have to say anything to her. When the others come back from the beach, he falls in gladly with plans to visit a further cousin the next day. He wants very much to be distracted and not to be alone. He does not know what happened, nor is there anyone he could discuss it with. When he imagines asking his friend Charles about it, or Isaac, his throat clamps shut. If he said what happened, they would think he was crazy, or weak, or lying. He thinks of the way she laughed at him. He finds himself searching her face for signs of what happened. What was it? Did she mean to do it? Had she planned specifically to hurt or scare him? Or was it just an accident, involuntary? Did she even know she'd done it? Or was it not her at all, but some lustful malfunction of his own body? The whole thing chews at him. She gives no sign that anything happened. By the last day of the trip, she's holding hands with another boy. There is shame, like rust, working its way through his body. He thinks over that afternoon compulsively. In bed at night, her lips, her breasts pressing against the smooth fabric, the outline of her nipples. His absolute vulnerability, the feeling that she could overpower him if she wanted. The thought of it excites him, and he touches himself. He tells himself he is excited by the memory of her body, the smell of her like hibiscus flowers. But he cannot know for certain. The things are tangled together now in his mind. Lust and power. Desire and fear. Perhaps it is because he has played the tape of that afternoon over so often in his mind, because he has longed for some forensic evidence, a photograph or a video or a sound recording. Perhaps that is the reason that he thinks of reaching for his phone first, in the supermarket. Or perhaps some of the things they have been trying to teach them in college, about citizen journalism, about the nose for the story, have been sinking in. He is in Goodies with his friend Isaac a few months after that day with Enuma. They are in the fruit aisle, inhaling the sweet fug of ripe guava, drawn to them from across the store like the tiny flies that settle on the surface of the overripe, split-open fruit. Tunde and Isaac are arguing about girls and what girls like. Tunde is trying to keep his shame buried very far down in his body so his friend will not be able to guess that he has secret knowledge. And then a girl, shopping alone, gets into an argument with a man. He might be 30. She is perhaps 15 or 16. He has been sweet-talking her. Tunde thought at first that the two knew each other. He only realizes his mistake when she says, "Get away from me." The man smiles easily and takes a pace towards her.
"A pretty girl like you deserves a compliment."
She leans over, looks down, breathes heavily. She clasps her fingers around the edge of a wooden crate full of mangoes. There is a feeling. It prickles the skin. Tunde takes his phone from his pocket, flips on the video. Something is going to happen here that is the same as the thing that happened to him. He wants to own it, to be able to take it home and watch it again and again. He's been thinking about this since the day with Enuma, hoping that something like this might happen. The man says,
"Hey, don't run away from me. Give me a little smile."
She swallows hard and keeps looking down. The scents in the supermarket become more intense. Tunde can detect in a single inhalation the individual fragrances of the apples and the bell peppers and the sweet oranges. Isaac whispers, "I think she's going to hit him with a mango." "Canst thou direct the lightning bolts? Or do they say to thee, 'Here we are'?" Tunde is recording when she turns around. The screen of his phone fuzzes for a moment when she strikes. Other than that, he gets the whole thing very clearly. There she is, bringing her hand to his arm while he smiles and thinks she is performing mock fury for his amusement. If you pause the video for a moment at this point, you can see the charge jump. There's the trace of a Lichtenberg figure, swirling and branching like a river along his skin, up from wrist to elbow as the capillaries burst. Tunde follows him with the camera's eye as he falls to the ground, fitting and choking. He swivels to keep her in frame as she runs from the market. There's the noise in the background of people calling for help, saying a girl has poisoned a man, hit him and poisoned him, struck him with a needle full of poison, or no, there is a snake among the fruit, a viper or puff adder concealed in the piled fruit, and someone says,
"A Jenny girl, Yensha. That girl was a witch. That is how a witch kills a man."
Tunde's camera turns back to the figure on the floor. The man's heels are drumming the linoleum tiles. There is a pink foam at his lips. His eyes have rolled back. His head is thrashing from side to side. Tunde thought if he could capture it in the bright window of his phone, then he would no longer feel afraid. But looking at the man, coughing up red mucus and crying, he feels the fear travel down his spine like a hot wire. He knows then what he felt by the pool, that Enuma could have killed him if she'd wanted. He keeps the camera trained on the man until the ambulance arrives. It is this video which, when he puts it online, starts the business of the day of the girls.